From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
The media and the Justice Department spar in court Thursday over the release of a secret FBI affidavit that justifies the search of Donald Trump's home in Mar-a-Lago. Plus, a week later, has the FBI search over classified document retention by Mr. Trump helped him politically? Welcome on Paul Gigot here with my colleagues Kim Strassel and Kyle Peterson. We're all with the Wall Street Journal editorial page. So this legal fight over the affidavit, which is filed with the court with federal magistrate Judge Bruce Reinhardt, but has not been made public in contrast to the warrant, which was made public last week on Friday after Attorney General Merrick Garland said he wanted it to be made public and Donald Trump agreed to it. Difference this time, though, the Justice Department is opposing the release of the affidavit on grounds that releasing it could compromise the investigation, a criminal investigation that they have underway into Donald Trump's handling of the documents. The press corps, of course, wants it released. The affidavit has filed motions in court to do so. That includes, in its own motion, our parent company, that is the Wall Street Journal's parent company, Dow Jones and Co. And the idea is that justification in the motion for releasing it would be that there's an intense public interest in this case and that it is very significant to get to the public to understand what the Justice Department is up to here. Donald Trump also saying he wants it released. And let's listen to former Vice President Mike Pence on this issue of transparency over the Justice Department.
Calls to defund the FBI are just as wrong as calls to defund the police. The truth of the matter is, we need to get to the bottom of what happened. We need to let the facts play out. But more than anything else, the American people need to be reassured in the integrity of our justice system and the very appearance of a recurrence of politics playing a role in decisions at the Justice Department demands transparency as never before. And I will continue to call on the Attorney General and the Justice Department to make that information available to the American people and do so now.
What do you make of it?
Yeah, in addition to those motions that were filed saying that there is a clear and powerful interest in getting this out, which, by the way, is an acknowledgement that this is a standalone case. It isn't just your routine Department of Justice investigation. It is an investigation into a former president. A lot of the motions have also pointed out that much of this, or at least the broad contours of it, have already been leaked and reported, and that that should weigh against the Department of Justice in its argument for ongoing secrecy. Some people have also pointed out that given the Justice Department decided to unseal the warrant, that that's only half a picture, or in fact a slice of a picture, that they have an obligation to go ahead and also put out the affidavit. I think working against those arguing that is simply that this is a Department of Justice, and they have made a claim to the U.S. magistrate judge in this, Bruce Reinhardt, that this affidavit would include evidence from witnesses that could cause them to stop cooperating, that there would be other evidence that would be exposed that could derail their overall investigation, etc. And at least in history, judges have tended to be very deferential to the Justice Department in cases like this. Now, again, it's a very different situation, but I am skeptical that maybe the judge will agree to this. I'm also on the belief that even if he did, there would probably be so many redactions in this, it's not clear how much information we'd really get.
Fair point, Kim. I think that might be likely. And, you know, if Justice Department, though, I think, as you suggest, would have a stronger case if this were, you know, some mob boss. This is a former president, had 70 million people vote for him, and he may run for president against the sitting president, Joe Biden. So there's just a much heavier burden, I think, on justice to justify this release and the need for transparency. And I just want to quote from the Dow Jones motion with Judge Reinhardt here. One of the questions, of course, is the degree of and likelihood of injury from the release of an affidavit like this. And Dow Jones' motion makes the point that continued concealment is more likely to be injurious than disclosure, as the nature of political discourse, which abhors a vacuum, has pumped all kinds of sensational suppositions into the informational void, end quote. Not the most mellifluous prose there. On the other hand, it makes the point that without knowing what the facts are, again, we're seeing leaks, all kinds of speculation about what Donald Trump did or didn't do, claims that, oh, he took these because the documents there and back to Mar-a-Lago because he wanted to sell secrets. No evidence for that. You had the leak to the Washington Post saying that the documents related to nuclear secrets. There was nothing in the warrant to suggest that. And all of this reminds me, Kyle, of the leaks that we saw during the Russian collusion probe, where story after story leaked that were treated as if they were sensational, you know, really suggesting real problems for President Trump in relation to Russia, and it all turned out to be nothing.
It does seem to undermine one of the arguments the Justice Department is making against unsealing this affidavit. So I'll just read a line from their argument to the judge, their written argument. It says, the release of this type of investigative material could have devastating consequences for the reputations and rights of individuals whose actions and statements are described. And you can understand how that would be true in the case of a secret investigation into a private citizen. You don't want the affidavit with all these allegations that may be unverified, maybe from sources that are wrong or misremembering things, to be floating around in the public domain. To your point, in the absence of that in this case, what you have is unnamed sources leaking all sorts of stuff that are doing the same sort of damage to the president's reputation here. And you also have to add the point that President Trump is the one who is asking for this to be released also. So he doesn't seem too concerned about the reputational hit he might take if it comes out. On the point about the witnesses, that's the other thing that the government really leans on, is that release of the affidavit might chill the witnesses that are currently working with the department or even future witnesses. I mean, we've already had some leak, some reporting that there might have been somebody within President Trump's organization who was helping the Justice Department, pointing them to this information, where it was stored, what President Trump had. And if you don't think that President Trump has already gone down his personnel list trying to figure out who that witness is, I think you don't remember the President Trump that I do. So I tend to agree with Kim, though, that what would maybe weighing more on the judge's mind is just the precedent of this and not wanting to break from the precedent that you don't release this pre-investigative or this investigative stuff before any indictment is made or before the case is closed.
Do you think that Reinhart will release it or not, Kyle?
I tend to think not at this stage. I mean, we don't know how long this investigation is, the Justice Department, the FBI are intending to take it on, but we're still a couple years out from the 2024 election. And so he could be thinking that it will certainly be in the next, you know, several months that they will either make an indictment or they will close the case. And then these media organizations and other people who are interested in public disclosure can come back and say, aha, now there is no pending investigation. So the argument the Justice Department made about witnesses and so forth doesn't hold anymore. So give us the affidavit.
Well, but then by that time, you have a circumstance where, let's say, they don't indict, but, oh, well, let's stick these accusations that are in the affidavit out there anyway, because, I mean, they'll have the ability to perhaps to harm Donald Trump's reputation or others. I mean, there's no argument for releasing the affidavit at that time, it seems, is stronger than the one there is now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would disagree with that, because I think the disclosure interest would be the same in helping the public get to the bottom of this. What changes is the arguments on the other side of the ledger, the arguments that the Justice Department is making against disclosure, I think much weaker if they don't have a pending investigation. And as we've already discussed, President Trump is calling for this to be out. So their argument about not harming people's reputations, I don't think that's very persuasive either.
All right, Kim, stepping back here for in the 10 days since the search, we learned about the search. What is the totality of the information we know? What do we really know here about what the FBI is going after and what kind of case they're putting together against Trump, if indeed they are? I mean, you have intimations in the warrant about the Espionage Act, about potential obstruction of justice statutes, and so on. Yet I don't see any evidence in the warrant so far, at least based on what we've seen publicly so far, of course, and we don't know what the Justice Department really has, that it rises to the level of an indictment and all of the commensurate, even on its own terms, never mind all of the political forces that such an indictment would unleash.
Yeah, that's just it. We don't know a lot, but what we do know, even though there's been some very inflammatory words and statutes mentioned there, I mean, the Espionage Act, really? I mean, that just really jumped out at me. We have that law that has been on the books for ages. It's rarely been used. And in fact, when I saw that, I actually led me to think that maybe they were grasping a little bit here. When you have to resort to the Espionage Act as one of your motivations for engaging in this, I mean, some people could say, well, that suggests that there really is something truly super serious here. But as you note, there was nothing else in that warrant to suggest that. There's a lot of other big unknowns as well, too. To me, one big question, which even the affidavit wouldn't necessarily settle, and even if we could see all of it, because that would describe the nature of the investigation, potentially what they were looking for, who was potentially talking to them. But the other big piece that wouldn't come in that, possibly, is why the raid and why now? What happened in the intervening time between that last meeting that the Trump team has described in June, which it claims went cordially, and then suddenly this raid? Why at all times, 18 months after the president has left office and in the run-up to an election, is this happening now? But, you know, to your bigger point, Paul, we don't know a great deal other than that there apparently are some documents, apparently some of them had classification markings on them, and that the Department of Justice wanted them back. And that's kind of what we know. And even there, that's muddy, as Donald Trump is on the record as saying that if they did take any classified documents from his house, that he had already declassified them anyway.
Right, which suggests that there'd be a huge fight in court over whether he has that classification authority to do that, as he claims. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk more about the political implications of this, what we've learned about whether or not the raid on his home has actually made Trump politically stronger, when we come back.
Your Money Briefing will explore what you need to know to become a homeowner and how to sustain your home by learning ways to manage the costs from unexpected expenses.
You're basically always in a state of checking. You're always keeping your eye open for anything that could be going wrong with your house. Your house is a complicated machine. It has a lot of systems and components in it, and those systems and components are getting older. They're wearing out.
You can get early access to our series, Buying a Home and Keeping It, on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal opinion pages, and I'm here with Kim Strassel and Kyle Peterson. Kyle, step back a bit and take a look at the political impact of the search and what it has meant for Donald Trump, both within the GOP and potentially as a presidential candidate again. I mean, I don't know what your inbox is like, but mine is filled with Donald Trump fundraising appeals. They go to the spam filter like all political fundraising appeals do on both parties. But they're there when I look at my spam filter, and he's raising money like mad about this in the wake of this. And the media assessment seems to be that this has solidified his position in the Republican Party, made it more likely that he, A, will run, and B, will get the presidential nomination. What do you think?
Well, we're still a long way from that, but it does seem to have reinvigorated his short-term political prospects here, because people are upset about the raid. People want to know what could possibly have justified that kind of action against a former president. But it is also, I think, a little bit of a moving target, because I think the conversation on Monday, last Monday, when the raid happened, was a little bit different than the conversation that we had on Friday, or Thursday, was it, when the warrant was released. And turns out that there was top secret classified information in those boxes. So the conversation is a bit evolving, and it probably will again as soon as we get the affidavit, if we do get the affidavit, and people will be parsing that. But it also seems to me like a bit of a Rorschach test, that people who are Trump fans are outraged by this and are enlivened by it, and people who are a bit worn out by the Trump scandals and were ready to move on after 2020 are being reminded again of the special Trump touch he has to kind of make everything on every subject blow up.
All right. Let's talk as well about broadness a bit. Just talk about the multiple legal challenges that Donald Trump faces, all kinds of fronts. We have the federal probe into the documents we've been talking about, plus there's the criminal probe, grand jury According to media reports looking into January 6th and those events, we don't know to what extent the president is subject or target of that probe, but he's clearly such a probe exists. There's the Georgia investigation into Republicans' attempt to obstruct the election results of 2020. Rudy Giuliani has already been identified as a target of that investigation, according to his lawyers. Then there's the civil suit in New York by the state attorney general, in which Donald Trump recently gave a deposition in which he took the Fifth Amendment, his right not to incriminate himself. And this week, we came to the fore with another one, the criminal charges in state court that the Trump Organization faces in a trial in October. Alan Weisselberg, the former CFO, chief financial officer of the Trump Organization, pleaded guilty on Thursday to 15 felony counts related to compensation he didn't pay taxes on for benefits like use of a car and other taxable perks. He has agreed to testify at the trial of the Trump Organization on some charges in October. Kim, what's the importance of this plea bargain and these guilty pleas and its consequences for Donald Trump?
Yeah, let me just add one more, though, to your very long list there. There's also a probe in Westchester County into Donald Trump's financial dealings with one of his golf companies. So the list goes on. The Manhattan DA case, in some ways, yes, they got their man in getting Weisselberg to plead guilty. But if you look at it, it's actually been, I think, more of a disappointment for Democrats who are hoping this was going to be a forum to get Donald Trump. Originally, this case began by looking at whether or not the Trump Organization had inflated the values of its assets and properties in order to get higher loans from companies, obtain more loan money. They seem to have been unable to have got any charges on that or enough evidence to make it stick, at least in a criminal court. In the process of that, they targeted guys like Weisselberg because they were hoping he would turn and provide some evidence. In the end, he never did. And notably, while he did make this plea deal now to 15 felony counts and will spend some time in prison, about 5 months, and pay a bunch of back taxes, while he's required to testify and admit his own role, he is not required to implicate, nor will he, it appears, Donald Trump in any way during that trial. So there's a possibility that the DA still scores something against the Trump Organization in this court trial, the entity itself. But for now, so far, it's interesting. There haven't been Trump employees that have been willing to somehow drag the president into this. And it'll be interesting. So the Letitia James suit that you mentioned, the civil suit going on by the state attorney general, this is a counterpart to that wider probe, again, also looking at inflated property values. And again, it's a much easier bar for her to go after him on that. That's probably still hanging out there. But this one, I don't know. I don't know if it's necessarily going to be a problem for Trump himself.
Kyle, we've never seen anything like this kind of broad legal assault against a former president, or for that matter, against any politician that I can recall, this many cases, this many fronts. You put it all together and you, if you're a Trump supporter, you say, wow, what's going on here? Why is everybody going after this one guy? And I'm not to say that he hasn't brought some of this on himself. Still, it's extraordinary to see this kind of judicial and law enforcement exercise. And as I think we've said in the past, Letitia James, the New York AG, deliberately said, I'm going to go out and target Donald Trump. That's what I'm going to do if you elect me, which is outrageous behavior for a prosecutor to say, we're going to identify the target and then find a crime. Usually it's, oh, we think there's a crime, so then you charge somebody who committed the crime, or you investigate somebody who may have committed the crime. In her case, it's, he's the target, let's go see what we can find out. I worry that this has the sense of undermining public trust in the rule of law. What do you think?
I worry about that as well. And I think that's certainly, this is helping Trump's political case here. But that's one reason that I am skeptical of some of these ancillary things about untaxed perks and so forth, is that if that's the kind of charge they're going to bring against President Trump, I think a lot of people will conclude that they, you know, five different prosecutors went through every drawer they could find, and this is what they could come up with. And I think that's one of the reasons that, I mean, I get the argument that nobody's above the law, and that's true. But you also, if you're going to indict a president like this, you really better have the goods. And I think that's an argument that you know, Merrick Garland ought to be thinking about. I think that's an argument for the local Georgia prosecutor and for anybody in New York is, you know, if you're going to try to nail President Trump, you better really nail him. And on something that people will believe matters and is not, you know, some Picayune accounting thing. And granted, I mean, I don't know, I haven't seen the evidence in all these cases. And so maybe there will be some bombshell email or something that surfaces in this Trump Organization trial about these perks that weren't taxed, but I'm skeptical of it.
Yeah, well, that's the key point, Kim. We don't know all the facts, so we can't really make a final judgment about any of this. But I think I agree with Kyle. If they're going to bring charge against Donald Trump, it better be really, really, really solid. And it better be not on picky small stuff. It better be a major offense. And it better be locked down. Because if Garland or anybody goes to a jury, particularly Merrick Garland, who, of course, is the attorney general of the Biden administration, whose president defeated Donald Trump and may be challenged by him again, you really have to have evidence and charges that persuade most of the country, not just 12 jurors in a jury box in the District of Columbia. Because if that's all you do, and if it's a minor, relatively minor charge, like mishandling documents or even something that looks to be stretched, a statute that looks to be stretched to apply to Trump, you're going to have a major political eruption. And I don't know where that goes. Last word, Kim.
Yeah, well, all right. I mean, and look at this Weiselberg plea as your example. I mean, again, this all started out that they were going to nail Donald Trump with this sweeping investigation into his loans and his asset values and in homing in on this one employee to try to pressure him to turn, they ended up drumming up these charges against him. Now, I mean, maybe they're merited, but, you know, even that is sort of cause for skepticism because the clear goal here was to pressure him into providing evidence against Donald Trump. So can we believe in those? I mean, that's the kind of corrupting influence you're talking about here. And I'll magnify that by, you know, gigantic amounts when it comes to the question of Donald Trump and the eruption that would come from that and the complete collapse of belief in law and order in this country. One more side outcome of this, which I worry about, aside from law and order and justice, is, you know, Donald Trump was a businessman, not a career politician, and he came into office. So we in general should want people from all walks of life coming in and serving government for some period of time, bringing their knowledge and expertise. And I'm not talking about Donald Trump in particular. I'm talking about that category of people. The message that this sends that if you come into office and everything you've done prior in your life and your business operation is suddenly fair game and, you know, can end you in years and years of investigations and legal peril, that's going to dissuade good people from coming into office. And that's another worry I have about all these investigations.
All right, Kim. All right, Kyle. Thanks you very much. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back every day, tomorrow and every day here on Potomac Watch. So please check us out and be sure to come back every day. We love to have you and appreciate your participation. Please don't hesitate to send us emails at pwpodcast@wsj.com. We'll try to answer questions and respond on the air during some of these shows. So thanks very much, and catch you later with another edition of Potomac Watch.